Okay, so we're gonna talk about Judy, you can hear me from all the way here, right? Okay, thanks. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the a deeper dive into the purpose of the Mishkan. Six approaches, six lessons. Okay, so one of the probably the second most famous, I think, debate between Rashi and Ramban regarding the order was last week's parsha when Nasa v'Nishma was said, and this is probably the most famous debate, I think. Maybe about this debate between Rashi and Ramban as to, yeah, feel free to call out if you want to pass something over, because I know it's like far away. So the most famous debate is probably when the Torah was given. I'm sorry, when the Mishkan was given, was the Mishkan commanded before the sin of the golden calf or after the sin of the golden calf, right? That's probably like the right? Ramban says, Parshas Truma preceded Parshas Kisisa. Parshas Kisisa is the Chedah Egel. So therefore, the commandment to build the Mishkan preceded the sin of the golden calf. And Rashi will say that the commandment to build the Mishkan, it was after the sin of the golden calf. So what would you say, if just someone were to ask you without looking, if someone were to ask you, what would you say the goal of the Mishkan would be? Like, why did Hashem command us to build the Mishkan? What would you say? So Vishachan, meaning what? Meaning that Hashem cannot, the Torah says, right, so what does that mean? That Hashem, I don't want to lead you on. What does that mean?
Well, it could be something directly opposing the corporal being for instance, idolatry. So you need something physical.
Okay, so you're saying that maybe we need some tangible way, so we need something physical. So you're saying this
something physical, something relatable, so that you don't do.
Right. So some structure that we can debate what the structure is. But I mean, one way of looking at it is something tangible, and may or may not be related to did it precede or after? Okay, precede or come after the sin of the golden calf. Why else might you think we need a Mishkan? So one is something tangible, relatable to serve Hashem. What else might be?
Yeah, I can think of something where you wouldn't need it. The opposite.
Yeah.
Because Hashem doesn't reside just in one place. He's everywhere. So
right.
That would be the argument.
Right, yeah, the Uncle Moshe argument. Hashem is everywhere. And by the way, Hashem says that in the end of Parshas Yisro. He says, B'chol makom asher, Askir Shemi, Shem, Tovar Lach Rechtich, I can come anywhere. So you're saying we might need it. But okay, so.
To get a gathering place.
Okay, so maybe there's some kind of. Gathering place for what? There are some folding chairs, sorry. Okay, sorry. We have one here and probably one folding chair. So it's like a gathering place. There you can. So a gathering place for what?
For who?
Right? I mean, maybe. Can you sit here? Sit here. Okay, so it might be a gathering place. Okay, what are the other thoughts? Why we have a, no, yeah, sorry, you go, we're good. Why else would we do a Mishkan? What's the other Mishkan? What do you mean?
Well, but Shachanti doesn't necessarily mean it as well. It means to be your neighbor.
Shachanti from Vishachain.
So.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Okay, yeah.
It could be by dwelling there, you're learning how to relate to people within your mix.
By Hashem dwelling, how we treat Hashem. Mm-hmm. One second. Are there others? You pass the source sheets down and the chult, of course. Okay. So
it's an example of how to treat others.
Smart, love it. Okay. Well, okay. That's interesting. How to treat others. You say how we treat a Kadosh Baruch Hu is how we treat, even though a Kadosh Baruch Hu is like a vertical relationship.
But he's bringing it
down. Yeah. Okay, I hear. Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay, we'll see. Some of these ideas, we'll see here. So great, we're asking what was the commandment to build the Mishkan? So the Ramban says, Vesod HaMishkan Hu, the secret of the Mishkan. Again, I'm working with the assumption, I'm dividing these six approaches into two. And the first two approaches fit in with the idea that the Mishkan is an ideal. And the last four, I think maybe you'll probably argue with me a little bit about that, maybe with one or two of them. The last four maybe fit better to say it was a response to the sin of the golden calf. So Rabban says, V'soda Mishkan hu, the secret of the Mishkan, Shiyya ha-kavod asher shachar al Har Sinai shochir la bedistar, that the glory that dwelt at Har Sinai, the Kavod Hashem, this sense of the presence of God that was on Har Sinai, shochir la bedistar, will dwell on in the Mishkan in private, in hiding. V'ayah b'mishkan tamid im Yisrael ha-kavod shenir lahem bar Sinai. So this kavod, again, I don't know exactly what it was. I mean, it was some sense of Hashem's presence, which Bnei Yisrael witnessed, and they really felt at Har Sinai. They felt it, or I don't know if they felt it, but that existed in the Mishkan. Uvo Moshe haya elav adibor sher nidaber lo bar Sinai. And Moshe came, right? The speech, what was said at Har Sinai, that same dibor, that way of how Hashem, who's not physical, spoke, whatever that means, produced speech, that was produced in the Mishkan. It's like a Matan Torah, it says, given the Torah, it says, Mishaman Mishmiacha Eskolol, Yasrekam Alor Terachas Isha Agdolah. It says that Hashem caused his voice to be heard from heaven. That's when we're recollecting Har Sinai. Kach b'Mishkan Ksiv, Vayishma Esakol Medaber Elam Me'al HaKapores, that says that he heard the sound speak to him from atop of the kapores, mibein shnei akruvim, from between the two kruvim, v'yadaber elav, and he spoke to him. Okay, v'nichba v'yadaber elav, it says v'yadaber elav twice. Lagi ma she'amru b'kabbalah, she'akol ba mina shemayim ha'moshim al kapores, u'misham midaber imo. So the way that Rabbi understands it, that the voice would come down between the two kruvim, and then it would go from the two kruvim to Moshe. Okay, that's how he describes it. But anyway, the Ramban basically says that the Bnei Yisrael had this intense connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with his Shechina, and the goal was to continue that. And again, they weren't able to experience it themselves, but at least that sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that presence, would continue through the Mishkan. Okay, so it's a continuation of Har Sinai. Okay, beneath star in private. Okay, second, which I thought you were going to get at, Eric, you're sort of getting to, Shadal says, a little bit different, and by the way, we're going to try to understand, like, what's the message for each of these approaches. We'll try that afterwards. Shadal says, Achar shekiblo aleihem hamishpati v'atoros, v'haya Hashem bishur melech, after the Bnei Yisrael accepted the mishpatim and the laws, and Hashem, you know, became the king. I mean, you're only the king when you have subjects. So when they accepted his laws, so God becomes the king. Roy shiyasalo mikdash. It's fitting that they make for him a mikdash, a castle. Ki'ilu malkamet shochein b'sochab. As if God, as it were, is dwelling amongst them. Hashem becomes the king. The king gets a palace. Ki yes siba chazaka lishmiras ha'achtus. We all love the word achtus. We have no idea what that means in practice, but we love that word. Ki yes Siba chuka lishmiras ha'achdus buma v'hatmadad dveikuta v'torah. So if you have this mikdash, okay. So there's a folding chair there. Okay, sorry. So when you have a mikdash, so the mikdash is a what does it serve? How does it serve? It serves to preserve the achdus, the unity. How does it do that? Why is it preserved the unity? Why is this mikdash preserve the unity?
Maybe it gives a sense of community the same way
a shul does. Yeah, no, it's a physical structure, and everyone can look to that physical structure, and that creates. Do you have it? Is there enough source sheets to be? Do you have? I can get another one. Here, one more. Pass it down. So very often, right? You look. It's like the center. It's like the center, and that center is a focal point, and that creates a sense of achdus. It becomes a national center for the Jewish people. So in other words, the first, again, these two approaches would seem to indicate that these two approaches, in my opinion, work with the, well, the first one is definitely the Ramban, who says this was commanded before the sin of the golden calf, and I think Shaddai also works with this approach, that the commandment to build the Mishkan was an ideal, it was an extension, either of the Sinai experience, in private, the Shechina, that sense of Shechina, it's there. If you think about it, that's what the Bnei Yisrael asked Moshe. They said, we can't handle the direct revelation, but we still yearn for it. So like they sort of want it, even though they can't experience it directly. Or secondly, this serves as once Hashem is their king, Hashem needs, now they have this palace for God, and this way creates a sense of achdus. Everyone's focused on this mikdash. The next four approaches, again, you might disagree with one of them. I think say that it's a response to the golden calf. So if the Mishkan, without looking inside, or you can, if the Mishkan's a response, how would the Mishkan be a response to the golden calf? What would you say? So we discussed one thing, which again, Aaron, you weren't sure. You said it can go either way. I'm putting it in this camp, but maybe if the sin was that they desired something physical instead of golden calf, so then the response would be to what? To get them a Mishkan, which something physical. But you're right, you probably could fit in before as well. I agree with that. But if it's a, what? How else could the Mishkan be a response to the golden calf?
To me, that's enabling it.
Right.
To me, that makes it worse. Like, if that's the issue, you have to wean them off of something like that.
Okay, how would you respond to Josh's comment? So you and Josh,
they're going to do it, show them how to do it the right way.
Right. So that's always like the question, right? In other words, there's always that question. Like, how much do you push someone, right? How much do you push someone? How ambitious are you when you are raising a child, when you're raising the children of Israel? How ambitious are you with them that you will try to push them? Perhaps how much beyond their comfort zone are you willing to push them? So Josh is like, get rid of anything physical whatsoever. And the question is, could they handle it?
I'm not saying it has to be an immediate cutoff, but you want to wean them off, not just go and say, okay, now we're...
Right, so maybe the goal was to, like the David said, to kosher it, or maybe to say it's not ideal. Like, it's a question of, you know, how...
Psychologically, redirection is a whole lot easier than the cold turkey or cutting.
Right. And by the way, you might even argue, like, you could also argue that this actually is like a, once they're doing it, it becomes a lechatchila, maybe. Like, this is a question. Like, but yeah, okay. Well, how else might the mission? Yeah, I'm sorry, what you said,
Well, I actually wanted, it's something that Shaddai said, or maybe it's my understanding of how you interpret it. You said that the Mishkan, that once you have the Mishkan, then God can be king. But he can't be a king without that. But that's not really true. I mean, he doesn't need a physical place.
Right. He doesn't
need people saying that. Yes, we acknowledge it.
Right.
If 8 billion people on Earth said there's no such thing as God, that doesn't mean there's no such thing as God.
Right. But he might not be a king. Meaning the definition of a king, is that you have subjects. So Hashem can be the creator, can be all powerful. The definition of a king is that you have a subject. And I think it's the Vilna Gaon who says this. That what's the Shir Shel Yom Yom Hashishi on Friday? Hashem Malach. Why did he become a Malach on the sixth day?
That was man was created.
So Hashem could be the definition. I think it's the Gra, maybe Rav Hunter, I'm not sure, but I've seen the idea that there's a Moshel and a Melech. A Moshel is a forced ruler. A Melech is someone who is accepted by the people. So obviously Hashem exists, but the definition of a Melech, definitionally needs serve people to accept it. Okay. So that's one that Aaron's saying, but I think there are a few other ways you could look at it. So one is, was the Mishkan actually, I have here, the means of atonement? Was it like part of the tshuva process? So you have this sifrei, says Rav Benaya, but there's no vav here. Okay, is that what's your if you move to like if you move to Bavel, right? In other words, if let's say Trump does what he does and flans it out, and eventually Israel expands its borders, and you want to protect the, and you move to Babel, and you have an Aramaic name. Well, what's the, do you know the Benayahu? It's still Benayah? Anyway, so Rabbi Benayah, and he gets, okay? Rabbi Benayah Omer, okay? It's a Shem, okay. Avdu Yisrael Avodah Zarah, okay? Harehem Chayavim Klaya. So, right, he said the Jewish people worship Avodah Zarah, so they should be destroyed. Yavo Zahav Mishkad, Yechaper al Zahav Ego. So the gold of the Mishkad atoned for the gold of the Ego. Rav Yossi Ben Chanina Ober, Vasiza Kaporas Zahav Tahor, he says, and you should make a Kaporas of pure gold. Yavo Zahav Kaporas, Yechaper al Zahav Ego. So the gold of the Kaporas atones for the gold of the Egel. So he says pretty clearly that the actual commandment was like a kapara. In other words, they use gold to do something really bad as part of the tshuva process is that they should now use their gold for something holy. So it was actually, according to this approach, that the building of the Mishkan, or at least part of it, again, it's hard to say it's the whole reason, because like you have to say that every aspect of the Mishkan, but certainly some of these reasons are not necessarily mutually exclusive, but part of the building, or maybe some of the details of the building of the Mishkan, was actually a method of kapara, and maybe it's connected to this. I saw this Tanchuma, which is Vasilu Mikdash Shachat B'Socham, Emas HaNemar L'Moshe Parsha Zushal Mishkan. What was Moshe told the Parsha of the Mishkan? B'Yom HaKippur Matzmo, on Yom Kippur itself. Even though it's written, you know, the commandment to build the Mishkan is written before the story of the Egel, in Mukta Mukhabatar, right? Rashi didn't make it up. It was actually the Chazal said it. But so here, if the commandment to build the Mishkan was said on Yom Kippur, so maybe was it a form of kapara? So one way of looking at the building of the Mishkan is it's actually a form of kapara for the sin of the golden calf. The next approach seems the same, but I think it's different. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, "Vayitena Moshe, ein muktam mochaber Torah, ma'ase egel kodem l'sivim lechaz haMishkan, yomim rabim." The story of the egel preceded the commandment to build the Mishkan for many days. Sherei b'shivasar b'tamuz nishtar v'luchos. On the seventh day of Tamuz, the luchos are broken. Over Yom Kippur, the nisratz Kadosh Baruch Hu lishon Yom Kippur, Kadosh Baruch Hu was appeased for the Jewish people. Ulam Acharas, and the next day, Hischel b'nindavas haMishkan v'hukah b'achav b'nisa. So he just says that he commanded in the donating of the Mishkan, fine. And then we have this Tanchuma, same Tanchuma, but now he says a little bit different. Another explanation. Okay, so they served as an atonement. Make for me a mikdash that I will dwell amongst them. Kidei sheyedu kol haumos sheniskapel ha'masa ego. So what's the purpose here? Kidei sheyedu kol haumos sheniskapel ha'masa ego. What does that mean?
So the
nations will know. I think the previous one is the previous affair of serving the Kippurah. This is actually to convey to nations of the world that the Bnei Israel have been forgiven. And that's why it's called the Mishkan Ha'idus. Shehu Eidus L'chol Bnei Ha'olam. Shkadosh Baruch Hu Shochein B'Mikdashchem. So it was like a testimony. Mishkan Ha'idus. It's testimony that Kadosh Baruch Hu is back with us. And Rashi, he quotes this. Mishkan Ha'idus Eidus Yisrael Shevitu L'hem Ma'aseh Egel Sharei Hishra Shechinasu B'neihem. So why should we care what the other nations think? I'm curious. I don't know. What do you think? Why should we care what the other nations think? It's a sign of forgiveness.
The only way to be an Ola Goyim is if...
If they have faith in us. You're saying if they believe that we're... Right. So in other words, Right. I think that's right. I think part of us being an Ola Goyim, part of us being Mamlachas Konim to other nations is that we are viewed as God's chosen people. So the Mishkan is a demonstration that despite the fact that we sin, the Kadosh Baruch Hu has forgiven us. Okay? Now the fact that he gave us this job, you know, notwithstanding that, like, you know, there's a question like, what was Aaron's responsibility for the Chet Egel? Well, the fact that the Kadosh Baruch Hu still makes him Kohen Gadol afterwards, it's a sign that God's okay with him, at least on some level, right? Because he's still the Kohen Gadol. Right? He's still the Kohen Gadol. So the fact that even after sin of the golden calf, he commands us to build a Mishkan, it's a sign that our pact with God is still intact. Right? That's approach number four. Approach number five is what we were discussing, the Rav and the Mor Nevuchim. So again, this is, I think Josh, you may, I know you don't like to argue with the Rambam, but you may argue a little bit than the Rambam here.
I don't always agree with the Rambam.
I know. Okay, it's okay. It's good. The Rambam would probably be happy that you're an independent thinker. Good job. Okay, so the Rambam says, Ki Efshar let's say, this is like a very important Rambam, in my opinion. Well, a lot of Rambams are very important. Ki Efshar let's say, minigud lenigud v'vas achas. You can't go from one extreme to another extreme. Lochein ein efsharup et teva adam, shiyazov et kol asher, it's not human nature to abandon everything that you got accustomed to in a single moment. Therefore, once Hashem told us to be a kingdom of priests, holy nation, but the service, the way to worship that we grew up with, is basically they grew up in a society where they would offer different animals, and in temples where they had different forms, different shapes, they would bow down to them. So they're used to this type of worship. So Hashem, Hashem's very smart. He knows what's going on. Can't be that he's going to tell us to simply reject this type of worship, to get rid of this. It just wasn't human nature. For us, nowadays, 21st century, we're like you know, we always wonder, like, do I really want the base of to be rebuilt and I can offer these sacrifices, right? Like, sometimes, like, we wonder about that. Like, any PETA people here? Okay. He's been chilling, so it's fine.
Doesn't the Rambam say that?
The Rambam has a line. It's very hard to argue about. It's very hard to argue. The simple understanding of the Rambam. Okay, the simple understanding of the Rambam is like this. In his Mishnah, that's separate here, but in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam. The difference between Mishnah Torah is the code of Jewish law according to the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch is the code of law according to Yosef Kairo. The basic difference between Rav Yosef Kairo's Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam's Mishnah Torah is the Shulchan Aruch are only the laws that are applicable at that moment, and the Rambam writes all the laws that were applicable then and in the Yemos HaMashiach. And so the Rambam in Mishnah Torah, where he codifies the laws that are then and Yemos HaMashiach, just like with the laws of Tumah Tahara, he writes the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, he includes all the laws of Korbanos. There's a line that he says somewhere, which everyone makes a big deal about. But I'm just saying, the pshat is that Rav Kook also has a pshat that maybe he's probably more compelling for Rav Kook about, are we going to have a more vegetarian society? That's another question. Do you want a Messianic era that's a vegetarian society? I mean, we fit to chill. Never, right? I'm saying, okay. So anyway, so we have to follow Rav Kook. But in any case, bottom line is that the Rambam, so he says, like, it's just not shayach. It's not shy. Like, now can we think like worshiping sacrifices, like bringing sacrifices, seems really strange to us. But it's like it's not. It wouldn't even enter their mind to serve God without bringing sacrifices. And look at the example the Rambam gives. And the Rambam says, "Hadavar haya domeh bo'osam yamim." So giving up sacrifices in those days, v'keilu b'yameinu haya bo navi akarei lavod es ha'akel v'haya omer. It's as if that in our days, and by he's saying this, Rambam saying this in the 12th century, you probably see the same thing in the 21st century. Akel tziva lechem shilotit palu elav lo tatzu v'lo tishavu elav be'et sara avonoschem tia rak machshava b'li ma'aseh klal. Let's say all we have to do is think. Think spiritual thoughts. Like, I mean, that might be easier. We finished davening pretty early. But, right? So what I'm saying is, the Rambam saying that telling the people not to sacrifice some animal, right, is akin to, in the 12th century, maybe in the 21st century, telling someone, no davening, just think divine thoughts.
Along with the Torah, if you look at it in context, it's taking things that are familiar and saying, spinning it on its head.
So right.
Concept is familiar, it's all wrong.
Right. And the question, of course, by the way, this is a very important Rambam. Because, right, so that it kind of points to the fact that it's like, to what extent do certain mitzvahs feel like outdated? Are they only connected, only response to what was written in those days and how applicable they are now? I like to say this, I like to use this Rambam to explain slavery, by the way. I just want to point out that again, there's no mitzvah to have non-Jewish slaves. Okay, there's no mitzvah to have non-Jewish slaves, and so why we regulated slavery, we didn't abolish slavery. I think that might be another example. I think Rav Aaron Salavitsky says this explicitly. So we didn't abolish slavery because it just wasn't shayach for people to think thousands of years ago that we could live in a world without slaves. So I think it's a similar concept. But the way you could look at this is therefore, you could look at this as the Mishkan is sort of, there's this reality. So again, you could say it happened even before, you could say this happened before Chedei Egel. The Rambam actually does believe it was after Chedei Egel. But I think it fits in very well to say after Chedei Egel, Kadosh Baruch Hu saw this reality, that we worship this golden calf. And so we needed, instead of saying, oh, you're such bad people, he did say that, but instead of leaving it there, he created this whole reality where, like, basically, he took our failings and he turned to a mitzvah. It's like amazing, right? He took what we're struggling with, and not only did he say, okay, try to do less. You know, sometimes when someone's doing, like, let's say someone's a drug addict, right? So you try to treat a drug addict, so you try to wean them off bit by bit. So this is not weaning them off, by the way. It's not even weaning them off. It's like you're saying you could do it, and not only is it okay, but the evidence, okay, I'm making it lechatchila. I'm making it a mitzvah. You see what I'm saying? It's interesting, right? Now, you could have said, let's try to wean this off. You could have said, okay, you can do this, but like maybe the future. This is actually a mitzvah. He calls it, turns into a mitzvah. Last approach, and then we'll try to share what this means for us, is the Sforno. I titled this Setting Divine Boundaries. Oh, that's what he, then at the end of this, I have the Rambam says, that's why he commanded to build the Mikdash for this purpose. The Rambam says explicitly here at the end of Morning Book. The Sfarno writes the following. We didn't need this. We could have had Hashem Shechina, right? That's what you're saying, Benaya. We could have had the Shechina everywhere, right? After Ban Torah, we were so connected with Kadosh Baruch, we were so locked in, so zoned in, we would not need to build a structure, we didn't need Kohanim, we didn't need Korbanos, we just went with the Kadosh Baruch Hu before the sin of the golden calf. However, after the sin of the golden calf, Gam kid vitfilas Moshe b'chiro netar la'seis chatasom la'asher shechitasom b'sochab. Moshe was not able to fully achieve what he wanted to do. To restore the situation before the sin. It's true he davened so that Hashem would lift up their sin and to bring his shechina amongst them. Al kolz im kolzeh. Omar, what did God say? Vasu l'mikdash. Listen, you want me to return to your midst? Fine, but we need boundaries. You got to build a mikdash. In other words, I'm not just coming back, right? Whatever that means. I'm not going to bring my friends back. There needs to be the structure. There was a lower level according to Sforno. They didn't reach the level they were before. And he writes, before the sin of the golden calf, the korbanos b'im nedava bilvad. All the sacrifices were nedava. They're all voluntary. The righteous of the generations. After the golden calf, some of them were obligation of the tzibur, like the Talmud, the Musaf, the Mincha, the Nesachim, and Ksasim Chova LeYachid, and some were obligations for the individual Ule tzibur and for the tzibur. So according to the Sforno, you couldn't connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well after seeing the golden calf. It was distant, but you needed the structure, you needed the tzibur, you needed the Kohanim. So when I look at these six different answers, so the message, again, they're all relevant, I think, for us. According to Ramban, Sinai was not a one-time event. The Shechina can still be found down here on earth, even after revelation. We just need to tap into it. That's probably the message of the Ramban, to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu Shechina, to bring a little bit of Sinai, when you have that, like, very heightened spiritual event, to bring it down and to try to continue that, try to always continue. When you have these moments of inspiration, try to continue it. That's what Ramban says, that's the message of the Mishkan. According to Shaddai, he says, we need to find ways to unite us. Because sometimes we're this shade and this shade, we're like, you know, we're a little bit different here, a little bit different there, you agree with this. And so we need to find structures, beliefs, I don't know, ideas, to focus on what unites us. In other words, the purpose is, at the end of the day, we have so many things that maybe we disagree about, but the focus is very important, that we need to not just say, okay, there's more that unites us than divides us, we need to actually think about things that unite us and try to rally around those things. You know, so we can just, not just empty slogans, but I think it's important, like the Kaddish Baruch Hu created Mishkan, it for the purpose of, we could see what unites us. And sometimes it's all about focus, right? There are things which unite us, things which divide us, and the key is, what are we going to focus on? According to the Sifrei, our resident Rabbi Benaya, who said that the Mishkan was a means of atonement. We took our sinful urges and we turned it around and used it for good. And the point is, Kadosh Baruch Hu provides us with opportunities of tshuva even after a horrific sin. The next approach is a sign. The Mishkan was a sign of forgiveness, that Kadosh Baruch Hu's love for us is like the love of a parent who wants to show us or show the world that he still loves us and he is reconciled with us. The fifth approach is that the Mishkan was an adaptation to new reality, the tremendous gift by Kadosh Baruch Hu. We made a mistake, and instead of simply punishing us, Hashem adapted our ritual and came down to our level. You know, there's sometimes like you find like every generation, the kids these days, they're not like what we were, right? So we say, what? I know, you're saying, right? Hey, you are a little bit old man. Yeah. So say, kids these days, right? Now the new generation every 2 years, right? Kids these days. So the answer is, it's not for us to say, kids these days. It's for us to say, okay, this is what they're thinking. We have to adapt to the new reality, not just to be, throw our hands up and say, what's going to be? It's all bad. No, every new generation, every new group has their strengths, has their struggles, and it's the job of the elders. Like what Kadosh Baruch Hu did, Bnei Israel sinned. Bnei Israel had failures. They showed their weakness in some regard, and Kadosh Baruch Hu adapted. So don't put the burden on, Kadosh Baruch Hu put the burden on himself. We have to put the burden on ourselves in order to reach out to people who may have different ways of connecting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And finally, the last approach is the setting divine boundaries, the Sforno. That's the purpose of the Mishkan, that sometimes when we're struggling, we can't do it ourselves, right? The Bnei Yisrael couldn't do it themselves. That's Sinu Golden Calf. Sometimes you need the Tzibur, you need the structure. So it's very important that we see the importance of the Tzibur in Jewish life, the importance of structure to lean in onto the Tzibur when we're struggling individually. So I think these are six different approaches to the Mishkan and six contemporary lessons for us here today. Okay.